The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Next week is sort of the ritual end to our church year with our flower communion, and so I'm reminding you all to bring a flower to add as we participate in the ritual next week. If your neighbor has a nice one in the garden, just, you know, take advantage of that. This, as you've heard, is our annual meeting Sunday. I have a note to remind you all that there is food actually being served because low blood sugar is not good for beloved community. So please come and know you'll be fed. It's where we do, as you heard, the business of the church. And it's more spiritual than it might look, more important, an expression of some core values that mean we do this work of discernment together. So this week and next feel to me like this opportunity for us to take a moment on so many platforms to reflect. I once had a professional coach who said to me that you cannot just keep going up the mountain ceaselessly. You have to carve out moments to stop, to get to an overlook, and to take in the view and see how far you've come, to draw breath and feel the immensity of it for a moment. And this time of the year is always that time for me. This week, I finally took home the last batch of thank you letters for our annual canvas, 70 letters, part of the over 200 households whose financial pledges to this congregation and its next year of life helped us raise $750,000. Which is immense and amazing. It's a tremendous accomplishment, thanks to Sherry and Jack Dilo, who led us in that effort. They did a phenomenal job of reminding me what our life together is about. And each letter that I sign has a name, and it's a chance, I realize, almost for this prayerful meditation with each name of thinking of that person's gift in all the ways that they show up in community life that I can't even fill the page with because I actually have really bad handwriting and get hand cramps, but I try. It's this moment of gratitude and awe and standing at the overlook and taking in the gorgeous landscape that we make together, all of us. This year, Reverend Shenham reminded me of what has also come up. I love the resonances today about how we actually also had a lot of fun this year. I'm sharing a slideshow next week, 200 slides, a lot of which are thanks to you. 120 actually, not 200 yet, though I have a feeling it's gonna grow. And you're gonna see in it evidence of fun. It's inescapable. We have lots of moments that look a lot like parties. Extravaganzas of joy, but also you'll see hanging of the greens and holiday parties and fairs with bad Christmas sweaters, really bad ones, and lots of them, and reindeer antlers, and Halloween coffee hours with costumes, lots of them, and not just small children, Easter with wild bonnets, auctions with loud Hawaiian shirts and tiki bars. My husband likes to point out how, moving to San Francisco, he realized the city loves dressing up, so much so, which actually Ben also said, where are you, Ben, at the new member thing. Randomly, he said, people love to dress up. Totally true in San Francisco, so much so that when you ride the BART or public transportation on Halloween in the city, you have a moment, as my husband rightly described, where you say, costume or normal for you? Sorry, this pulpit was built for smaller people. I need a little help. Yeah, so lots of joy. And joy at the center of a lot of just how we gathered and how much we need joy and needed joy, right? At the end of pandemic and with what we're facing, it's like it fills us up so we can dance through the mess that we have to wade through and work through and heal in the world. Reverend Shenham said to me, we navigated a lot of challenges, but we did it without sacrificing our ability to hold on to joy. I think that's true. Some of what happened this year and was most remarkable happened while I was away, which is a great sign, as an old church member reminded me very early in my ministry. Ministers come and go. We're the church. Well, that's a good way to put you in your place. Point taken, point reinforced on sabbatical. So much great stuff happened with Reverend Shenham and Reverend Sonia also here to help. While I was singing Kenny Rogers and looking at the American Southwest and dreaming about the future, you guys were doing serious work, like writing that covenant. When we started articulating a few years ago where we thought we might be headed together, we thought there were three parts to that. There was mission, there was vision, and there was covenant. And the first mission was about what we were going to do, the kinds of things we were going to do. And the vision piece, that was about the sort of vivid, inspirational, aspirational picture in our heads of where we were trying to get to, a bit like the singing fish that I thought in his picture were catfish, but they were singing. They just looked like they had whiskers, but now I know. And the third of those pieces, the third leg in the stool, was this covenant piece, which is this effort to articulate how we want to be on this journey together. That's covenant. For a community that's not bound by creed, by statements of belief, but by shared values and principles, the covenant piece is especially important. Pluralism, which is what we have to be about in UU circles, requires that we put at the center our respect for one another and the practical way to hold our similarities and differences in this life together, even as we serve the same mission and vision that we've dreamed up together and share. It's true of our nation, too, this idea that in a pluralistic world, how we are together and hold our similarities and differences should be at the center. It's certainly true here. Because as wise people have said before, we only move at the spirit of trust, engendering change and transformation in ourselves and the world. Most covenants in UU circles are quite similar in my experience. I sometimes wonder if you switched them in the middle of the night, if anyone would notice. And I expect that that's because fundamentally we share and want a lot of the same basic things reflected in those covenants. Our desire to be good to one another, to seek to be better together and how we think that happens, that we resolve our differences with grace, and that we're generous and stretch our hearts and our generosity. The words matter, though, and that we choose the words we say and hold ourselves to matters. In part because when we write them down, when we choose them, we are actually binding ourselves to this articulated sense of promise and promises. It's the same way that saying aloud our promises to each other, when we say other moments of vows, when we dedicate babies and promise ourselves to them, when we meet in moments of marriage and commitment, when we welcome our new members, we say vows and promises. Because saying them out loud gives us something concrete that we publicly commit to, and that we hold ourselves accountable to publicly also. And that public articulation and commitment significantly increases the chances that we will live into and up to those commitments. So it isn't just words, it works. So we did that. You did that. And when I came back, a lot of people told me how satisfying it felt, like they were surprised, which is nice, how satisfying it felt to create the covenant, and how impressed they were by how many people showed up to spend a good part of a Saturday together for this. But more than that, and this is fascinating to me, how the covenant has already changed their relationship to each other and the church. Last week at the retreat, I heard one story that I got permission from both parties to share. That's an example of this for me. There are two people at UUSF who are welcome to out themselves, but I will not, that had a break in their relationship this last year. It was one of those breaks that seemed to me felt confusing and awkward, and neither seemed to know how to step into to repair. I think we've all had those moments. We're probably living in at least one of them right now in our lives. Hard not to have them. Both of these people, as committed lay leaders, came to and participated in the covenanting process that Saturday, and something clicked, I guess. Because one of them approached the other at the end and said, "Hey, we need to talk. I realize that we broke covenant with each other." Later, the two talked and they found a way back into relationship. That was this aha moment about the power and the practice of covenant. That it isn't just theoretical, that it can give us this way back into relationship, handholds in relationship, ways to deepen and repair, and that it's always there for us. And if you forget it, it's on our website. So please search and find it under who we are. Oh, it's in the order of service too. Is that why you're waving the order of service, Liz? It's in the order of service too. So that was huge this year, to start to live into it. Let's see that from the Overlook. This year, as Cal mentioned, we also dug into the newest articulation of our Unitarian Universalist faith. Naming what we believe in a non-creedal faith is a huge challenge. As you know, if anyone's asked you what Unitarian Universalists believe in the elevator or on a bus, probably took you most of the ride to try and answer. But since our denomination is voting at our annual meeting this year, it seemed like we wanted folks to know and be part of that conversation. And we did a lot of programming around that. Reverend Cheryl Walker came, who was part of the creation of it and the team that guided that process. And I want you to know that in the background, while all of this conversation was going on, we have been taking seriously what Paula Cole Jones, who was the co-author of the Eighth Principle, that is the principle that's being woven into this new articulation of our faith that holds us accountable for dismantling systems of oppression, right? To being accountable to that work. What she has been saying about what she thinks it means to be the communities we are aspiring to be, that it's not just a Band-Aid fix, that it's literally a shift in some of the culture of how we are together. And covenant is part of that, but what she thinks we need to get really good at is leaning into conflict, because when we start to surface things that have been sort of part of the air we breathe, right, that are not helpful, that are destructive patterns, we are going to need to get good at having open conversations that are challenging, right, which can feel and be conflictual, and that we need to just get good at that, really facile with it, which is not always something that most of us learn. I think I've asked before, how many people learned how to do conflict really well in your family of origin? I still am waiting for a hand. So, you know, but it's important, right? And we can see why. And the covenant is helping us with that. But I just want you to know, we have been working really hard and training people. Mari's been part of that training. We've had advisors sort of working with us about how do we have hard conversations and hold everybody through them, because we love everybody and we want everyone to get through them together, right? And none of us is disposable, and we all can learn and we want to get better together. And we're not perfect, but we are getting really, really good at it. And if you don't see it, I want you to know, because the next time you're in a conflict, we will come in and you will be part of it and you will see what it feels like. And it's amazing. So let me give you an example. Most of you know, of course, that part of what has been just so awful about this year is holding the unfolding strife and bloodshed and increasingly the genocide that is becoming evident in Palestine and Israel, which I sent a message out, thanks to everyone who made calls to the White House this week. And this overwhelming feelings, as I've been growing, have been deepening among so many of us about what's going on there, the sense of hopelessness and powerlessness and anger and heartbreak. And we've been holding the differences in positionality and relationship to those issues and people in the region in our conversations, and differences of opinion and evolution of opinions that come about as this has been unfolding in the world. And a lot of other communities and organizations have been torn apart by this conversation. And the fabric of their life together has been torn apart. And we have managed to hold these conversations and feelings even as we have educated ourselves and engaged them, so not avoided them. There have been speakers and witness opportunities. And I'm sure there's been disappointment from some about what we have done or what we have not done, and we've held that too. And I think we've really worked hard, everyone in this congregation, to keep love at the center of how we are together holding this issue, so that no matter what happens, we are around and strong to face the next issue, which, there are lots of them. And we need to be there together to work together for them. And we've been putting that at the center. And I want to give you an example of what that looked like in practice. I don't know how many of you noticed that the banner that was out front that says "Love demands a permanent ceasefire now." First of all, how many have seen that banner? It went up a few months ago. Great. How many people noticed that it changed? Well, it changed. The wording is still the same as the original banner. The original one was one that an organization gave us, and it had the colors of the Palestinian flag in it. And a couple months ago, a member who is of Jewish background approached the board and named the way that this made them feel, that they weren't invited to be part of that call for ceasefire. And literally a week later, I was walking with a young person of mixed religious background across the front steps of the church, and they said that they wondered, seeing that banner, if they could be part of this church, though they grew up in it. So we reached out to the Human Rights Working Group, and we met together with one of the people who raised this concern, and we asked if the banner could be changed, and we changed it. We didn't change the words. We actually made it easier to read in black and white. But Jonathan Silk made new designs. We had that reworked, the minister's discretionary fund at your service. It was printed and hung. We didn't have a false fight about whether people had a right to feel excluded or some other detail. We just drew the circle of support for the issue wider. And we put love at the center, which is, truth be told, what the world needs to figure out a way to get through cycles of unnecessary suffering. So love at the center, like the new articulation of our Unitarian Universalist faith, if you have seen it, that has this flower that has love at the center, everything running through love. That thing, love, that you cannot define, but you know it when it shows up and you feel the chill in your bones when it is eclipsed. We learned all of this year. We practiced it. Take the view in. We learned other things. We learned that a former minister had broken covenant. And we were reminded of the concerns and the hurt that happened years ago when people suspected that his boundaries were broken. And we learned in those conversations that there is still hurt. And we talked and walked through it. I'm not sure it's healed, but we faced into it and shared what we knew. I think there were some ways in which our lessons about how to walk through difficult conversations that we know now could have helped then. So hopefully we'll learn to be better in those really hard moments. I also just want to say that one of the things that I took away, and I think many of us took away from the conversations about this, was that the lawyers demanded a level of silence to keep risk for liability low, that I understand their desire to encourage us to have, but that didn't serve our community's shared life and governance and transparency and trust well. And so I hope one of the lessons we take away is that we also enter into negotiations where we ask for as much transparency as possible when we're in difficult situations, because we have shared governance here. And our people deserve to know that as much as possible, their values are being held and how the processes are proceeding. We are learning how to be strong and good and connected in a world that sometimes teaches us the opposite, lets the opposite run for office. We learned our world hasn't forgotten how to be together here at church. It's been a lovely post-COVID recognition that our rentals are back up to pre-COVID levels. We hosted a week and a half ago the first, the Harvey Milk Democratic Society hosted it, but we broke our backs trying to make a last minute request possible to have all five mayoral candidates here in a beautiful debate, brilliantly executed with a lot of respect here at the church, which was lovely. We have a Sangha meeting. We have a technology addictions group meeting. We had a bar mitzvah last night. We are part of what we have always been, the center for civic life, for deepening human beings in community of all walks of life and all causes. It's a great view, and we got here together. So I invite you all to take it in and to rest and to rehydrate, which is what my coach also said you should do in those moments where you stop on your way up the mountain. Because the next leg will begin in a few weeks. And while we take it in, I want to share the words hammered out in a morning together in January. The words of our covenant. In an effort to make the world a better place, we support each other's journey to seek truth with openness, curiosity, and respect for different perspectives and paths. As love is our spirit, we commit to respect, accept, listen to, and support each other. We hold ourselves and each other accountable by continually assessing our individual and community actions toward living into our covenant. This will include speaking up when someone's actions are not aligned. We commit to be in community with openness and loving kindness, acknowledging our own biases and differing perspectives. We welcome the newcomer. We commit to building trust with each other. We celebrate differences and make space for repair when harm occurs. May all of our intentions be made ever more real and incarnate in our world, in our lives. I love you all. Blessings. We made it a good way up this mountain this year. And even had a little fun. So blessings in the year that we celebrate, in the year we prepare to live into.
My spiritual brother Calball invited me to a training called Tending Soil. Soil, S-O-I-L, stands for skills, organizing, interdependence, liberation. So tending to everything that those words entail. The goal of the program was to help us grow leaders into organizers who can lead effective teams. Cal's interest in attending was to shore up our Journey to Wholeness work here at UUSF. The training started this January and culminated in a weekend intensive led by the wise and wonderful Reverends Kathy Ryan Starr and Ranwa Hamami. The intensive was grounded in UU theology, which affirms that our free and responsible search for truth and meaning has a goal, that of building a world community with liberty, peace, and justice for all. No one is unworthy of redemption, transformation, and liberation. Since we're a covenantal faith, the main focus was on expanding our deep listening and relationship building skills to help us imagine and craft the worlds we cannot live without as we dismantle the ones we cannot live within, as Ruma Benjamin said. There was an exercise where we were asked to start at the end by drawing a loose map of our vision of the world we want to see and then share it. Cal said he was worried that his drawing would look like something a second grader would make. But he took a leap of faith and participated. His picture surprised us both. It was simple. It could have been drawn by a second grader. But its simplicity was what made it so compelling. Cal had managed to dig past the acerbic layers of adulthood to uncover the sweet wellspring of his imagination, the source of his true nature. At the top of the page were baby blue clouds. A lush tree with a thick trunk floated on the upper left next to a bubble encasing a group of stick figures with wide open smiles. On the upper right was another bubble containing prairie grass or wheat that appeared to wave in the breeze. The center of the composition featured a moose standing next to a large pond teeming with colorful fish. A happy elephant at the bottom of the page grounded the lively tableau. There were thin squiggles emanating from every creature and plant in the picture. I asked Cal about that. He told me, the lines are everyone singing. Everyone? I said. Everyone and everything is singing in harmony, he said. So the choir, the tree, the fish, the grasses, everything is singing, I asked. In harmony, he nodded. I was overcome. See, my picture went from dark to light. The world I drew was in a process of healing. A world without something broken wasn't even a possibility for me until I saw Cal's picture. It was pure joy, unadulterated, unspoiled, unapologetic joy. I don't believe in hell, but I also don't believe in heaven, so I never really allow myself to imagine a place like that. Maybe pockets of it, but it never occurred to me to imagine a place so whole, so complete, so beautifully bright and expansive, so completely untarnished. But it is real. It lives in my friend Cal. And because he dared to dream it, because he dared to share it, now it lives in me too. My hope right now, while the world is in flux, is that we do everything in our power to fight the urge to hurry past and over each other in our desperation to fix things, to feel safe, that we don't lose sight of the only real thing that will bring about the world we dream of, connecting with each other, deepening our relationships, especially when doing so requires us to go slow and get messy. May we never forget that works without love are empty. May we have the courage to have faith in each other, and may we always remember what the Reverends Kathy and Ranwa taught my brother Cal and me, that the things we fight for must be the things we fight with. Gracias a la vida. Amen.